The Board of Supervisors will convene and will do the flag salute. Chaplain Bradley, would you lead us in the flag salute today?
All right. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
And let's pray together. Father, it is great. We are grateful to be here today as government continues to operate. I pray you give us understanding and help us to adjust as the elections are over and many changes are being made. God, we just need to be grateful that we have that opportunity as citizens to participate, to cast our vote, to make our voice known. Father, I thank you also, as we remembered yesterday, our veterans. And we need to do that every day of our lives. We especially appreciate those who are serving even today in difficult places. Support their families, encourage those who are away. And Father, we would always remember what they're doing. For the meeting here today, for the business of the county, we pray for the decisions that need to be made. We ask for wisdom, understanding, and Father, we pray for integrity on the part of everyone who serves in our county. And we are truly blessed to be able to be here, and we give you thanks. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen.
Thank you.
Okay, make a little announcement real quick. The board will be convening today as the Siskiyou County Flood Control and Water Conservation District, Siskiyou Power Authority, County Service Area 4, and In-Home Supportive Services Public Authority, and receives no additional compensation. Okay, let's start with Supervisor Howe.
Present.
Supervisor Valenzuela.
Yep.
Supervisor Chris.
Present.
Supervisor Ogren.
Present.
And Supervisor Thompson.
Here.
Thank you.
And for the record, I'd like to recognize Supervisor-elect Jess Harris is in attendance today. He's been here all along as well as his opponent. Congratulations. We'll see you on this side in January. This is time slot four. Or wait, are we going to do presentation? Do you want to do the urgency item? Okay.
So we have one off-agenda item. After the posting of the agenda for the Board of Supervisors meeting of November 12, 2024, the county was served with a summons and complaint in the matter of Samantha Schleider versus County of Siskiyou et al., Siskiyou County Superior Court case number 24CV12876, which is a lawsuit filed by a former employee against the county and county employees within its health and human services agency, alleging a hostile work environment and discrimination among a series of other causes of action. The next board meeting is not until December 3rd, 2024, and council needs authority to defend through outside counsel and direction regarding this matter before that date. Therefore, council requests that the board determine by a two-third vote of the members present today that this is an urgency item pursuant to Government Code Section 54954.2B2, and it be added to the closed session agenda.
So I'm looking for action from the board.
So move.
I have a motion and a second to add it to the agenda.
Closed session. Thank you. All righty, Supervisor Help.
Aye.
Supervisor Valenzuela.
Yes.
Supervisor Chris.
Aye.
Supervisor Ogren.
Aye.
And Supervisor Kopsev.
Aye.
Thank you.
All right, this is item four, presentations from the public. This time slot is for information from the public. No action or discussion will be conducted on matters presented at this time. You will be allowed 3 minutes for your presentation. Written comments can be presented if so desired by providing a minimum of 7 copies to the clerk. When addressing the board, please state your name for the record prior to providing your comments. Please address the board as a whole through the chair. Comments should be limited to matters within the jurisdiction of the board. I have no public comment here. Anyone in-house? Doesn't look like it. Anyone online?
We're showing none online.
Give it a minute, just in case. No one online, so we'll move to the consent agenda. We can pull items 5C, 5E, and 5F. Anyone else? If not, I'm looking for a motion to approve the balance of the consent.
So moved to move the balance.
Okay.
Second.
And a second.
All righty, Supervisor Haupt?
Aye.
Supervisor Valenzuela?
Okay.
Supervisor Chris?
I'll be an aye.
Supervisor Ogren?
Aye.
And Supervisor Kopsa?
Aye. Item 5C. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So, can we sort of address C and E at the same time as they're a little
sure.
bit related?
If they're
they
related, sure.
Related.
Or, I mean, if, I guess the comment will be the same. How's that?
They kind of go together.
Okay.
So, in reading through all of these, item C, item E, item C expired in June of 2023 and has been extended through January of 2024.
Correct.
Which is almost a year ago. And item E is from July of 2024 through June of 2025, which gives us about a 6-month gap in services. And so the services are related between the contracts, which opens up a whole myriad of things in my mind in relation to the county's liability, accounting issues, labor issues. All these are concerns of mine. And I look for coordination between our departments, auditor, finance, all those things to try to mitigate the issues that we have with contracting. We're looking for kind of an explanation of item C as to what happened, and then for item E, why the discrepancy, where we lost that continuity in contracting, and then what we can do in moving forward to try to fix this issue, and how we can make sure moving forward, what are your goals to try to, you know, mitigate this moving forward?
Got it.
Okay.
Sarah Collard, Health and Human Services. So you are correct, they are related. And it's unacceptable, and I hear your concerns and I share your concerns, and our team has been working and met with Sherry Lawson, who's provided support, and they're strategizing and looking for ways for this not to happen in the future. So I will say both these issues are related to payment reform, which occurred in July of 2023 and required the department to develop a whole new contract template that included the requirements associated with those changes. So you will see that on the North American contract. That is the new template, and it transitioned from the county template to that. And so it took a long time, I think, both for our department and for our contractors, including our telehealth providers, to really wrap their mind around what those changes meant. So it was a lot of negotiation back and forth. With Invitel, we were negotiating with them to get them onto that new template. In the midst of that, there was a name change, and so we had to go back and start over. And then we decided not to move forward with them. So this is just to clean up the past. We're not moving forward with them. With North American, we transitioned them to the new template, and so we're moving forward. And there's one other out there. I'll just give you a preview. There's one other telehealth provider that we've been in the same negotiations with that will be coming to the board as well. But it is really that transition having to do with payment reform at the state level.
So how far in advance of the contract expiration were you aware that the changes were coming so that you could be negotiating before the actual expiration of the contract?
That is a good question. And we were aware way before that change happened, but what happened is DHCS released information slowly over time. So even now they haven't figured out how to pay us, right? We're a year and a half into it, and there are many counties that are facing real challenges because they're not able to reimburse them through the mechanism that they set up. So we were aware far in advance, but we didn't get a contract template until right before or right after. I can't even remember. It was, different pieces came out over time. So it wasn't like we had everything we needed to start well in advance of when the contracts had to be in place.
So is there, and forgive me for my ignorance on this, is there a way to have a generalized contract that says you're going to do what we direct you to do?
There was that. We were
to get started and then be able to amend a contract with additional...
Yes, in general, and no with this transition. So now we have that contract template, and so it will be much more streamlined going forward because now the providers have a better understanding of what payment reform is and what it means, as does our department, and we have a contract template that incorporates all of the requirements around that change. So yes, and not in this particular transition because we went from the county template to this new.
So moving forward if something, well, we know something like this isn't necessarily going to happen again.
Let's hope not.
Let's hope not. In our lifetime.
Yes, let's hope not.
Okay. Because I guess my concern, again, is that liability-wise and everything else, we should never be hiring people without a contract.
Understood. And again, I think the CEO's office is providing some support. We're in the process of bringing on extra help. Workforce is the other piece, but so we're working through that and hopefully setting ourselves up so that this doesn't happen again, because I completely agree with your concerns.
Thank you.
Okay. Motion.
I will move to approve.
I'm getting a motion and then I'll come up with
it.
Not yet.
I missed it. There you go. Never mind.
Okay, you're withdrawing. Go ahead.
I had a couple of questions.
Sure.
First off, telemed in general, I use it too, but it seems like in psychiatry there could be quite a bit loss in just the human presence.
I completely agree.
And I know my own experiences with other health things. You can't monitor blood pressure. You can't stare the person in the eye. You can't really. I mean, it's like watching TV. It's not. So I'm wondering about the effectiveness regarding psychiatry, as well as the competitiveness of how we're doing these contracts. I was informed by some constituents in South County, there is a psychiatry service down there in the county. I don't know anything about it. I suppose they have some psychiatrists and psychologists, and I'm wondering if the process we go through is excluding switching back from this COVID telehealth thing to more in-person presence and more effective delivery of the service.
We would love that. I couldn't agree more, particularly when it comes to children. We recruited for psychiatrists after Dr. Brown's passing, and his son worked for us for a while, for years without a single applicant. So through the county, the county position process. North State Nursing, is that what she calls herself? North State Nursing is a mid-level that we've worked with in the past who is interested, and her contract is in here as well, coming back at least in part in person. So we're really happy to have her coming on board. She's local and will be in person 2 days a week, hopefully 1 day a week in South County, and then the rest of her time will be telehealth. We would love to have more psychiatrists in person or a psychiatrist in person. With regard to counseling, there were some changes made at the Department of Healthcare Services that allows us to hire providers, counseling providers that are in school still, which we weren't able to do in the past. And so we have actually have brought on several providers. So we're really reducing our telehealth for counseling and not so much for psychiatry. That's where it's really challenging, and there's just not enough providers. I mean, there's not enough providers across the continuum, but sure. With psychiatrists, it's very difficult.
Okay. I'm glad you agree with me on that.
Absolutely.
You know, and then getting back to the psychiatry piece, I'm going to share a personal observation from somebody I know who experienced some pretty hallucinogenic kind of situations, but not drug-induced. Associated more with Parkinson's and with dementia.
Mm-hmm.
And the telehealth actually exaggerated that, something to do with the observers said something to do with the flashing of the screen. It just didn't work and made the patient actually worse. So I'm just asking you, pleading with you actually to maybe look at some way to sift out those situations so that doesn't exacerbate the issue in healthcare that we're providing.
That's good feedback, and I haven't heard that feedback because we don't serve that particular population, but we have had that feedback from others, and as I said, I'm very happy to have someone in person that can, that we can have work with those particular people who are challenged, particularly challenged by them.
And this is something provided out of hospital in the county.
Yeah, they have the same challenge, I know, with getting providers.
I understand, but it wasn't helpful.
Yeah, yes, for sure. And we've had that experience as well.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. I will move to approve both C and E.
Second.
All righty. Supervisor Help?
Aye.
Supervisor Valenzuela?
Yep.
Supervisor Chris?
Aye.
Supervisor Ogren?
Aye.
And Supervisor Copso?
Aye.
Thank you.
Item 5F, the Wairega School contract. It's in one FTE, so I'm trying to figure out why we contract with the school, the highest tax recipient in, county and in the state, and
sounds
yet
familiar.
We're subsidizing, and
yes.
I don't understand that. It's a little difficult for me. I do appreciate that it isn't, here's all the funds, and then we audit on the other side. You pay by billing, which, per incident, per se. So that, I like that. But I'm just not getting why we're contracting with the schools.
So for several different reasons. One, we have this pot of money through MHSA that is dedicated to early intervention and prevention. The schools have a kind of access to students that we don't. I think that there is progressively more funding coming to the schools to provide those services on site, which I will just tell you, because I started my career in Siskiyou County in 2000 when we had providers in the schools,
mm-hmm.
right? Behavioral health was in the schools. So for a variety of reasons, that's changed. And it's really, in terms of access, the best place to catch people, to catch kids, right, and to engage them and their families. And so the schools haven't historically had funding for counseling, distinct from educational counseling, right? Like, what do you want to be when you grow up kind of thing. And so we have been providing that support. And they are really effective in terms of they're the only provider in the county that has the ability to do the early intervention, which is the individual counseling type services, in addition to other things that they do. And that's a key piece of our continuum of care to keep kids from getting worse, right, and then needing services from behavioral health. Those are the reasons.
So why wouldn't we just hire someone under your department to just man the high school and be there for that? you would have more control,
have...
I guess, is what I'm saying. And now with, you know, depending on whether it gets repealed or not, AB 1955, where parents are going to be removed from some of the various issues that you're talking about, I don't want to subsidize that. I can't support that.
The reason to your first point, mm-hmm. right? The challenge, and this has gone on throughout my whole career, the challenge with behavioral health being in the schools is that we are the provider for the Medi-Cal population, right? So there's a lot of kids in school that need services that aren't on Medi-Cal. And with PE&I funding, the school counselor has the flexibility to see anybody who walks in and is having a bad day, whatever that looks like, right? And so we just don't have that flexibility, and I think that that was one of the reasons why schools stopped having behavioral health counselors in the schools, just because there was a lot of need that was outside of what we were able to provide, and they have more flexibility under this. With regard to the other, right, I mean, we expect schools to follow the laws just as we're required to follow mm-hmm. laws. I will say, as a provider, as a former provider, and for providers generally, it is always the goal to get parents engaged in their child's treatment and in their child's life. And so whether or not that law ends up going into effect with the lawsuit successful or not, you know, providers work to engage parents because parents are the most important, you know, people in a child's life. So a child would have the option to say no, but providers do work hard to, and we do that around all kinds of other issues as well.
Understood. I just think the new law is going to create more of an issue. And I, like I say, I can't go there.
Understood. So, I get it.
Anyway, thank you.
You're welcome.
Supervisor Chris.
How many students petitioned when they served?
So I saw your question. I emailed you this morning. So last year they served 240 in counseling and groups and 124 attended Challenge Day. So I anticipate it will be a number very similar to that this coming year.
All right. When I was in college, I had the opportunity to be a student counselor. And as you can easily see, I chose this job over that job.
Yes.
So
I can understand why.
A lot of stress to that occupation. And I know you do this other stuff throughout the county as well. So that's all I have.
Okay, thank you. Looking for action from the board?
So moved.
Okay. Second.
And that's to approve, correct?
Yes.
Thank you. Supervisor Help?
No.
Supervisor Valenzuela?
Yep.
Supervisor Chris?
I'll be an aye.
Supervisor Ogren?
Aye.
And Supervisor Kopsap?
No.
Thank you,
Bill, for the explanation.
Of course, anytime.
I want to take up item 10 for Cal Fire. You're here somewhere so we can get you along your way. So we will recess as the Board of Supervisors and convene as County Service Area 4. This is a time for public comment for County Service Area 4. Anyone in-house? Seeing none. Anyone online?
Showing none online.
And none online. Consent agenda.
So moved to approve the consent agenda.
Can I second?
Sorry.
All right.
Any questions? Okay.
No.
Director Howe?
Aye.
Director Valenzuela?
Okay.
Director Chris?
I'll be aye.
Director Ogren?
Aye.
And Director Kopsap.
Aye. We'll adjourn as County Service Area 4. You're clear. I think that's it, right?
Yes. Yeah, we'll just get it signed.
So we'll move back to item 6. Public request 6A is Orcal Resource and Conservation and Development Area Council. Who is here? George. Good morning, sir.
Morning. Going to just be introducing the speaker. He's got a PowerPoint presentation for you. So.
Okay.
So thank you, Board of Supervisors, for the opportunity to share the great news. But from Orcal RCD Council, we were awarded a $5.5 million.
We need your name for the record.
George Jennings.
Thank you.
Executive Director of Orcal RCD
thank you.
Council. We just wanted to share the news that we were awarded a $5.5 million grant from the Wildlife Conservation Board in February 2024. The project will fund a wildlife study and engineering design along I-5 from Shasta River Bridge to the Oregon border. One of the deliverables coming out of the data is the design work on two wildlife overcrossings for Interstate 5 and may spin off into other opportunities for bridge access and fencing to reduce the number of wildlife and vehicle collisions. The project was driven by state legislation requiring Caltrans to conduct these studies in areas where there are high collisions. Siskiyou Mountains I-5 was identified as one of those areas. And OrCal was offered the opportunity to apply and chance to reduce the number of wildlife and car collisions. Really resonated with me personally. Growing up in Siskiyou County, right around the time the freeway was put in, I had to witness was a slaughterhouse on the interstate from, you know, Anderson Grade all the way up into Oregon. So I watched the deer get killed up there for years. And, there's also additional pressure now with the success of elk herds and the added risk of a larger wildlife being in collisions with cars, where life is even, you know, the human life, and not just the damage to vehicles is coming to play. So we're super excited to be able to bring a solution. You know, you can all view that, you know, stick to the things you can have some effect on, what you have a chance to do something about. So this project's pretty exciting to us. I just wanted to recognize the support that we've been getting from the Fish and Game, the Siskiyou County Fish and Game Commission, Cal Deer, and working with all the partners, Caltrans, and all the U.S. Fish and Game, and the State Fish and Game. It's been a great project. It's pretty easy to want to reduce the number of kills along the way. Also, we have a couple, we've been able to hire or put in 5 positions full and part time. So a couple, Rink and Alicia over in that corner there, they're out there on the highway doing the work and gathering the data, working with Fraser. And then now I just want to introduce Fraser Schilling from UC Davis. And he's going to talk about the project. He's works with UC Davis and DUDEC, which is the lead contractor on the project.
Good morning, Fraser. Good to meet you in person, finally.
Yeah. Well, thanks for having me here, everybody. Sorry about my voice. It feels a little rough. I had some dental work done. So I work at UC Davis. I direct...
If you would, for the record, thank you.
Yes, Fraser Schilling. I direct our research center at UC Davis, and I also work for DUDEC, which is a consulting firm. It's the lead contractor on the project, as George said. And... I realized I put that photo up there, and then I realized just now that maybe that was too gruesome. But, you know, that's something that we see all the time, and it's one of the main reasons for this project is to stop that from happening. So I appreciate you all listening. Next slide. And I'm going to talk really briefly about our study. This is actually one of the culverts that's already under I-5. And wildlife use a lot of these existing, we call them existing crossings. They could be pipe culverts, locks, and bridges, and so on. So wildlife actually go back and forth underneath. This one's really popular. That's actually a ringtail species of special concern there on the left. But a lot of deer go through this particular one, and had some mountain lions as well.
Where's it at?
Yeah. It's between Innocent Grade and the Klamath. There's a series of pipe culverts like that. So we've had cameras on these structures to see what wildlife are already going through, because we want to make sure that we understand both what wildlife are around, and also we don't want to put in something new where there's already something existing that's working. So we want to find the gaps, basically. Next slide. That's actually the same structure there in the top right. And you start to see these deer, these grow up, they grow up, so this same small fawn was much smaller in an earlier photo with spots on it, and so this is actually a pretty successful place for the deer to go through. The bottom right, that's a mountain lion, not popular with everybody, but just checking out a small culvert. That culvert, only a few animals have gone through, and that's characteristic of a lot of the structures under the highway, is that they're small, they're for drainage. The one on the top right is it probably for cows to get back and forth. But there's not a lot of opportunities for wildlife to get across a highway like I-5. Next slide. So we often build new ones for wildlife, and we call them wildlife crossings. These, there can be a lot of different kinds of these. Sometimes they're arches, sometimes pipes, sometimes box culverts. And they're usually built for deer, elk, so the larger ungulates, wildlife throughout the West. The West is where most of these structures get built. But at the bottom left, it's hard to see in this picture, but those are a couple of pipes inside that concrete box structure. And those are for desert tortoise. So structures are built all over for different needs, but most of them are for larger wildlife, and that's our target as well. Next slide. And we're looking at doing something similar to what Washington did, and that's at the top right there. That's a series of structures that WSDOT built under I-90. Similar size highways, similar kind of ideas. A lot of, in that case, a lot of collisions with elk. They built both overcrossings and undercrossings. They've had elk mostly go over the overcrossings, not through the undercrossings. Other wildlife will go underneath. Bear, for example, seem to prefer to go underneath. And deer will go through both. This is one way of doing it, is building bridges where wildlife go underneath. Next slide. And then the other one, which is getting more and more focus in California, is for these overcrossings. And right now we have one in California. It's called an expressway in Southern California. It was built to connect two preserves for endangered species. There were mitigation for a lot of suburban development. But often they're built for, in the West, for pronghorn, bighorn, elk, so the larger wildlife that people like to hunt. One in the top right there was the largest in the world. I think it's in Belgium or the Netherlands. I keep mixing it up. But there's a new one going in Southern California, which will become the largest in the world. And that's not our goal. We're not trying to build these gigantic ones necessarily. It's going to look more like the bottom left, which is a much smaller idea, connecting vegetated woodlands on one side to the other. And the bottom left one is actually a design. It's the same company that we're working with on this project called Mark Thomas. They're an engineering firm. So they're doing the engineering design. And that one's for Highway 152 going through the Coast Range near the Bay Area. But that's essentially for the same reason. That's going to be built for elk and deer, other large wildlife, in the same kind of landscape as this. Next slide. So the first thing we're doing is we're finding these places where there's the most collisions. Not hard, because this is a place where there's a lot of collisions. Statewide, it's one of the hottest hot spots, both in terms of the number of animals hit, but also the severity of the collision for the people. People do get injured, occasionally get killed in collisions up here in the North State. So I should have done a better job of labeling that, but those purple dots up near the top of the slide, that's our part of I-5, and the purple is the high-cost collision areas. And so you can see, for I-5, it's one of the worst places, and compared to other regional highways, it's also one of the worst places for collisions. Next slide. So overall, we want to see where are the wildlife getting hit, where are they also just moving around. So if we build something for wildlife to connect, we don't want to just build it where they're getting hit. We also want to figure out ecologically, where are they moving, where do people see them, where do they have good habitat, where are they likely to move in the future. And so that's the first part of what we're doing. The purple areas in the map there are suitable habitat for elk. There's an elk herd that comes down from the north on the west side towards Cottonwood Creek, up and down between Oregon and California. And then there's another herd that seems to be coming over from the east. And people think they haven't connected, at least not for 100 years or 50 years or so. But they are right on the other side of I-5 from each other. So our ranch and then other ranches have seen that you've got elk on both sides, but we have not seen them go underneath. So they're not going through the Shasta River Bridge or the Klamath Bridge. So they're separated. And at some point, they're likely to get on the highway. So then they'll be an even worse collision. So we're starting with where are the wildlife, where are they moving? Then we're going to go to engineering feasibility. Where could we actually build a structure, go through all the documentation process with Caltrans, and end up with what's called a 65% design. And that's essentially something you can put out to bid for building a bridge structure over I-5. We're looking at the top two places and then start to find funding for building those structures. Next slide. And I think this is almost my last slide, maybe one more. So the first phase is collecting data. We collect a lot of different kinds of data. Frank and Alicia over there in the corner do the camera trapping, so they're on the right-hand side. That's on some fruit grower property. We had permission to go on there and put up camera traps so we can see where the animals are. We also look at a whole lot of other characteristics that would go into choosing whether or not you could actually or should actually build a wildlife crossing, including ownership. Is the topography appropriate? What other kinds of development are nearby so you don't want to have an inappropriate combination of wildlife crossing in someone's house, for example? Next slide. And then we do what's called an alternatives analysis, which is to say, okay, we've got these several places where we could do something, and wildlife seem to be going in this area, so let's pick the best view, analyze them, compare them from a variety of different points of view. Often the thing that holds things up would be a CEQA consideration or an engineering consideration, like the land is just not stable, you cannot build something there. That would be an example. Or there's utilities that are too expensive to move. So we'll be going through that process over the next couple of years. Next slide. And then we'll get to a structure like this, and we'll have a design and cost estimate and start to go to state and federal partners for funding. So this is not something we would expect the county to fund, but we have appreciated the constant support of California Deer Association in helping with these kinds of questions of where do you go for the funding, and it's great to have a lot of partners like that. Next slide. I guess it's not my last slide. So we're finishing up our data collection. We are getting some data from Oregon, from different state entities, and we're starting the alternatives analysis. And next spring, we're going to be starting to map out possible locations. This is, I think, a good place for people to start to get involved and see more information. Right now, there's not a lot of there to look at, so we're really in the early stages. And then engineers will do investigations of alternatives, and we'll have a set of possible alternative locations in the summer of 2025, and that'll go into our CEQA process. And that's it, I think. Yeah, there we go. So thanks very much for your attention. And interest.
And we have one going in on 97, I think.
Yep.
Building starting what, next spring, 2025?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. About to bid right now.
Yeah, near Grass Lake. Yeah.
Yeah.
Supervisor Fountain.
Yeah, I know that seems to be, Southern California's got a big one going in that's very popular, I suppose.
Yeah.
So where is the funding coming from for these kind of projects?
Yeah, so this Caltrans likes to. There's no one from Caltrans here. They like to suggest that other people pay for it. But I think, you know, they have $22, $25 billion a year for transportation projects. So I think it's fair to go to Caltrans and say, this is good for you to build. And actually, Fish and Game started pressuring them in the 80s to do something about all the deer kill when they first started putting in the median barriers and there was more and more traffic on I-5. So I would say that would be the first target, is the state. And especially with AB 2344, which requires them to do more to protect wildlife movement, especially when you've got a long identified conflict area like this. Federal sources are possible. The bipartisan infrastructure law under the pilot wildlife crossing program, they just put out either their second to last or their last RFP, so we're not going to be able to use that funding, but if they reauthorize it, then that could be another pot of money. And that would probably be a match to a larger pot from the state. The WCB, Wildlife Conservation Board, with the passage of Prop 4, just got $185 million, I think they're going to get. And then CDFW will be getting some funds from that as well.
I'm sure there's more projects than there is funding.
Oh, totally.
So yeah. You talk about Anderson Grade, and I don't discount what's going up there because I've seen enough up there. But I live in South County, I see plenty.
Yep.
Including going in Shasta. Do you know if there's any other studies going on besides yours and here? Or?
Yeah, well, our first goal actually was south of here. Wildlife Conservation Board likes the map that CDFW did showing this area up north is where we should focus. I agree with you that south of here is also a priority, actually all the way down to Shasta Lake. So the George and I have talked about Wairika down to Weed as being the next priority. Mm-hmm. And You know, you've got a lot of those undercrossings for cattle that are possibly being used, and especially when the elk get there. It's going to be a big question mark. What do the elk do? Elk can jump those cattle fences, and so they could end up on the highway right there. They're getting closer. They're definitely coming down on the west side. So, yeah, I would love to do that, or I'd love somebody to do that. Nobody's doing it. I know that. And actually all the way past Shasta City.
There. Oh, there's plenty of places. I mean, I go south, particularly around Sims Road, you know, all in there. I've seen plenty of bear kills.
A lot of bears get killed between Shasta Lake and Mount Shasta.
Do you know if those center medians, what kind of an effect they had on all this?
Yeah, so we actually have a study of that statewide for Caltrans, and there is definitely effect of the concrete median barrier, and it's complicated because large animals can see over the top, mm-hmm. so they will go for it, but then they get stuck and they'll get hit. Mm-hmm. Small animals see a wall and they're less likely to go for it. So you end up with essentially a wall for the small animals, they don't try, and the large animals, the bear, the elk, the deer, they can see over the top and they can see those trees over there and they go for it. They seem to get to the middle, and you can imagine a deer or an elk, they skitter around on the smooth surface unless there is vegetation, so they get trapped in the median.
Thank you.
Hey, you're welcome.
We've had one elk kill near Weed Airport, and there's sightings of crossing there. I guess 20 cows cross there. So they're meeting up with this herd on the gazelle side. So just FYI, I know some of the guys know that, but it's growing.
Yeah.
Supervisor Chris.
Thank you. Also, you know, give a sales pitch for Highway 89.
Yes, definitely.
Is that another spot for
Actually, all of the highways in this region, there's areas where we should be doing something between here and Fort Jones.
I know there's always more.
I'm not a proponent of doing lots of studies. I'm a proponent of getting to the building.
Yeah.
But the state will. We've tried. They will not build anything until we show that it's needed, and the bar isn't low for approving that because they don't want to spend the money. So the initial part is to show there's a need, and just showing those collisions doesn't seem to be enough. We've been trying that for years. But it's really useful. It's great having the county involved and interested and supportive. CDA and others, it really helps a lot.
In regards to Oracal, I'd say our $375 we're getting our money's worth. That's our membership cost for that. So thank you. And then for the Highway 97, I know the county did a couple letters on that. The Dally's office was really helpful with 97. I don't know whether it might come on the board or not, but maybe we might consider a letter from the CEQA process for what you're working on I-5 right now.
Yeah. There's not a, at this point, we don't have a location like they did at 97 when they had Grass Lake. We have a need and the possibility of locations between, you know, in an area. So a letter would be able to say, yes, it's a good idea, without saying exactly where it's going to be. So it's a little pre-CEQA. The CEQA process itself won't be for another year, starting up with that.
And I would just suggest for the CEQA process letters, a lot of these areas are served by volunteer firefighters, and so by the time they hit that elk and there's a response coming, mm-hmm. so we might want to include that in those letters if the board wants to at that time to advocate. But by the time they get the response out there, people travel rural areas to see the beautiful scenery. Mm-hmm. They don't realize by the time if there even is volunteer firefighters or volunteer EMS to get there, it's quite a distance for aid.
Yeah, we're good. Health services on that, and rural emergency health response is a huge issue. Yeah.
Thank you.
Supervisor Ogre?
I have so much to say, but I won't. I want to thank you guys because I had the chance to go out and actually visit the sites and be with you when you started this project. And I've been able to help a little bit. With some of the information that you've been gathering. I spent almost 30 years living in the area that you're studying, so I know a little bit about what's traveled through that area wildlife-wise over the years, and it is a critical area, and it needs attention. So thanks for letting me take part in that and have a little bit of say in, you know, what you're studying. And I really do hope it gets to move forward because it is important work and you're doing a great job, and I hope I can continue to help just a little bit through the OrCal board and also, you know, as in my position here. And any support we can give you is, you know, truly important. Yeah, there's good work that needs to continue to be done there and also throughout the state, but those spots that you're looking at are really critical and they're good spots, and you've convinced me that there are elk on the east side now because historically there haven't been, so I believe you now, and the elk that are on the west side keep growing, and every time I go up there now they're everywhere, so keep up the good work. Thank you.
Supervisor Howe?
Just a quick question. When you build a bridge, there's a lot of maintenance involved with it, and now you're adding vegetation on top of it, which is another maintenance component. Who's responsible for that?
Well, this is partly why Caltrans doesn't like to do these things, is because ultimately it's their responsibility to maintain. And they don't always do a stellar job of maintaining wildlife facilities, but they're getting much better. And I think once it's built into their culture, and this is what they say, it's getting built into their culture so that it becomes part of their practice. Then it'll just be maintained like you would any bridge, you know, which means sometimes things will fall through the cracks, but the bottom line is that they'll just keep it going. Their primary concern is liability. So if, for example, you said, well, you've got to maintain vegetation across the bridge so that you don't have whatever issues there might be, then you get their attention. Yeah, exactly. They generally don't plant trees on them, so it'll be low bushes, would be the tallest.
It'll come.
Yeah. They may start to grow, but.
I just want to add one thing about the data that was gathered through the years through some of these retired fish and game wardens over on the east side on 97 was the reason that they went from just designing and putting this thing on a shelf to being implemented next year. Because the data gathering. So that's the data gathering is huge for going from just designing to getting built. So,
yeah. Especially renting clay.
Yeah. All right. Very good. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We can good to continue
yeah,
here.
Let's do this one and then take a break. Out.
Okay. 6B. Is there anyone here to present, or is it just on us? Okay.
For the DAR, I don't see anybody.
I don't see anybody here. So, wishes of the board. I have a motion to approve.
All second.
All righty. Supervisor Help.
Aye.
Supervisor Valenzuela.
Sure.
Supervisor Chris.
Aye.
Supervisor Ogren.
Aye.
And Supervisor Cupson.
Aye. So we'll take a 5 minutes, and
yeah,
then we'll take
yeah.
up OES on 7A.
That'd be good. Thank you.
Good.